and his entire career hitherto as Pope demonstrates that he intends to be right in the middle of governmental relations and the new structures that are being set up. And that was the background reason for all his trips. When he started making his papal journeys and trips, people said, well, this is good PR, and this is evangelical. And of course, it was great PR. He has achieved a high profile unmatched in the history of man. About 3.5 billion people have heard him and seen him, either in the flesh or in image. And then in contact with the government, he has talked intimately with the governments of 91 nations. And they have embassies on Vatican Hill, 117 of them. And his whole activity with them has been to impress upon them his moral function and role. It's not a question of dominion with armies or money or anything else. It's this one thing. He says, look, you are rushing towards one economic system, a multi-trade, multi-nation trading system which will englobe every nation on the face of the earth, including Red China and the Soviet Union, in whatever condition the Soviet Union is, and every other nation too. And you will have to have some agency supervising that. It will in effect be a government such as we've never conceived before on the face of this earth. It will be a geopolitical government, not a national political government. And I intend to be there with the moral law and the religious truth that I'm supposed to represent to men as Vicar of Christ.
Well, Dr. Martin, there's absolutely no question of the charisma of the man from his many travels, and I was fortunate enough as a Vatican correspondent to travel with him to many parts of the world. But I would question whether when he's away from the crowds, when he's sitting talking with politicians who have a vested interest in themselves, whether they even conceive of a one-world government, of what would amount to them losing power.
Well, I don't think that they have any choice. I think it is the sometimes implicit, sometimes explicit admission of most of them that they cannot get on without each other now economically. De facto, Phil, you know, no nation can exist today without trading with another nation. And trading is not merely exchanging goods for goods and barter for barter. It's this invisible but real tie of money. All the money markets have been globalized. And what happens in Tokyo affects the money market in Dusseldorf. And that affects the flow of capital and the flow of capital goods. They know that. They're being cautious about it. But on the lips of a President Bush or Mikhail Gorbachev or Mitterrand or Kohl or Taifu of Japan or Fahad of Arabia, this phrase, the New World Order, is continually recurring for the last 6 months. They've started to talk about it. And on top of all that, then there's this amazing consensus, moral consensus, as one newspaper called it, of the nations as regards what's happening in the Gulf. De facto, every nation, including Red China, and 98% of nations, have supported the move. There is this overarching moral consensus about the behavior of Saddam Hussein. And if I had told you this in August 1989, you would have horse-laughed, Phil.
But what about the Pope in all of this? Does he see himself as a sort of minister of morals?
No, he sees himself as the guiding light of the morality and religious truth of the human situation faced with a one-world economic order and what will be a one-world government, but not of the nationalistic type. It's a new form which we don't know its outlines yet. We can follow the restructuring of the United Nations now in progress, and I suppose by 1991, 92, they will have completed that restructuring and see how that's linked up with what is now called the common market of nations, stretching from Vladivostok in China, across the Eurasian heartland, across Europe, across the Atlantic Ocean, to the beaches of California, and taking in the nations north and south of that line in one swath. It's something which is coming so fast, so easily under our noses, that nobody knows exactly what steps are going to take place tomorrow, but they're going to come. He won't be a minister of religion and that. He intends to be more than that. He intends to be the patriarch, as it were.
Dr. Martin, we will pursue more of the Pope's predictions and beliefs for the future of this planet of ours in a couple of minutes. Imagine a world with just one government, no parties involved, no particular little leaders battling it out. Well, believe it or not, that is the prediction coming from those who have studied the words and the works of Pope John Paul II. Apparently, I say apparently because it's not entirely clear, apparently the Pope believes that by the end of the 90s, governments as we know it today will no longer exist and there will be one world government. Now, who says this? Well, Malachi Martin says this. He is a theologian. He's an expert on the Roman Catholic Church, a former Jesuit, and professor at the Vatican's Pontifical Bible Institute. He's the author of numerous bestsellers about religious life, about the Vatican. And Dr. Martin has an absolutely uncanny knack of predicting the future. His writings go back many, many years, and he's been bang on several times. Well, now he's talking about the Pope being involved in this one world government, a sort of moral overseer. But this is based on Christian beliefs, and in the world today, there are Muslim factors and other factors which are going to go and are diametrically opposed to what he believes in.
I know, and he knows that too. There is Islam stretching from Algiers over to Indonesia, almost 1 billion people with a completely different outlook on life. And there's China with over 1 billion people. And there's India with 800 million coming to 1 billion. And there's Japan with 128 million people who are Shintoists or some form of religion which has nothing to do with Christianity. He knows that too. But he's relying also on an action of heaven, of God, through the Mother of God, and this is a firm belief of his. And the book is supposed to outline what this Pope holds is going to happen, and that's exactly what the book does.
Does this Pope does Karol Wojtyła, this Pope, does he believe that this was destiny from day one for him?
Yes, he believes that he is the Slavic Pope destined to preside over the creation of this one world economic order and one world government of that new kind, a geopolitical government.
Well, if there's anyone who's been watching and reading and researching the church for a great many years and is eminently qualified to speak about it, it is you, Dr. Martin. Do you believe all this is going to happen?
Yes, I do. And you know, Phil, the word believe is a particular word to use. It's a human belief. It's based on the concurrence of human interests, where we all depend on each other finally, so that Saddam Hussein is an anomaly and must be crushed and must be eliminated, and where now we know no nation can exist without all the other nations, not merely for bartering goods and exchanging money with convertibility rules, but in a much more intimate way. There is a new culture starting, emanating from the West and spreading to the East and spreading North and South and West. And this, in conjunction with the extraordinary ability of this man, and then the growing consensus of the nations, despite all their differences, and the differences still subsist, my goodness, and the dangers still subsist.
That's what I was going to ask, Dr. Martin, whether we're going to be able to achieve all of this without another war.
Without another war, I would think, again, it's a question of that type of belief and analysis. I think without a third world war, a nuclear war, but that blood will be shed, that nations will be devastated by war locally, yes, I have no doubt about it, that there will be, like, for instance, in the Gulf, there's going to be that, and it may be a Lebanon-type situation for quite a while, a short while, because the weapons of today are much more devastating than the weapons of 100 years ago. But that there will be trouble under the heavens, as the Chinese say, yes, I'm sure there will be. Karol Wojtyła, as Pope John Paul II, is a firm believer in the change of history inaugurated by God under the name of God's Mother, Mary. He's a firm believer in that, and that this is the age dedicated to that peculiar change in human history towards the end of this millennium, 2000.
Dr. Martin, I suppose what we need to know is whether world leaders are going to take any of this prediction of a one world government seriously. Let's explore that in a couple of minutes.
Hi, Jeff Stevenson here for Greyfriars Realty. Now that the real estate market is returning to normal and interest rates are heading down, it is probably...
Dr. Martin is a theologian an expert on the Roman Catholic Church, a former Jesuit, and professor at the Vatican's Pontifical Bible Institute, Biblical Institute, I should say. He's the author of numerous bestsellers, and now he's telling us that Pope John Paul II, before the end of this decade, is predicting one world government, that simply the world will not look the way it does today by the end of the 90s, and the Pope in there will be some sort of great moral overseer, and this based a lot on his travels and discussions with the world leaders. Do you think that the leaders that count, and by now, by that I mean the George Bushes and the Mikhail Gorbachevs, do you think that they truly take this man seriously as a world statesman with influence and power?
Yes, they do. They take him so seriously that, you see, they take him seriously, I'll tell you, for two or three reasons, first of all. First of all, his undeniable prestige. He has an amazing prestige with them. He's in communication with them, secondly, by telephone and by emissary. He has, as you know, a vast network of his own representatives in 117 countries and in those major countries. Their function is recognized not merely as go-betweens or as intelligence gathering sources, but as people with a point of view which they drive home. He has this enormous prestige. Number three, they have talked with him, and he has found amongst them a consensus on basic moral values, which they all acknowledge. And most of his work is behind the scenes, and he has the cover of the white robe and the skull cap and the papal ring, the great fisherman's ring on his finger. But his influence is undoubted, and his men, his analysts, engaged in geopolitical studies and analysis, their point of view, based on a passionless intelligence and data which are objective and deep in their sweep, is taken as one of the best monitors of what is really happening in the human race.
What can he do to revive the, not necessarily the fortunes, but to bring people back into his churches?
That is a very sore point in his personal achievement. He has said in public over 10 years ago, he has said that the church must be reformed, that it is in shambles, that practice of the faith is diminishing, that in fact whole nations will lose Christianity before the final denouement, before the final curtain is drawn on all this. But he says that the changeover, the refurbishment of Catholicism, the renewal of its faith, the opening of its churches, the acquisition of good priests, good bishops, good nuns, real nuns into the bargain, will be a matter which will be achieved by divine intervention, not by a huge missionary effort.
Because he is hardly a reformer himself, though.
No, he's not a reforming pope at all, Phil, nor is he a crusading pope, nor is he a religious pope in the sense that only the practice of religion lies in his heart. All those things do lie there as motives for his actions and his interventions with governments. But he's primarily a geopolitical pope. The only thing he maintains is that now we are not in the geopolitics of reason and commerce alone. We're in a wider thing called the geopolitics of faith, and that once the human race is involved, then the great issue of God's will is involved, because God created this race and sent his son, his only son, to die and save them from eternal perdition. As you see, his politics is riven through with his morality and his religion.
Anyone who's seen him in action, as it were, when he travels, is always astonished by his stamina. A man who was shot, a man who still suffers from the effects of his wounds. But if all of this is to happen by the end of the 90s, do you think he's still going to be around? Is he going to be able to maintain this stamina?
That may be the sad part of it, Phil. It may be that his life has to be sacrificed either by sheer exhaustion or by some other more violent means. We don't know. That's in the hand of God. And in his mind, it reposes in the face of God, which is unknown to man. But it may well be that one of the greatest reasons, or the greatest event in the evolution of this cosmic event, will be his life. We don't know. We don't know, nor does he know, nor is he troubled by it. He's occupied with the day-to-day work and drudgery of maintaining this profile and extending his influence, which is enormous, enormous.
Dr. Martin, as with all of your works, it is once again a monumental work from you, the keys of this blood, and we thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, I thank you for the time, and I'm highly honored by being on the air with you.
Bye-bye now.
Good man.
Dr. Malachi Martin, it is a humongous work, as I say, and we went on at great length with that interview, but I thought a fascinating look at what some people are predicting for this planet. And speaking of great honors, it's a great honor now to say good evening, Kim Emerson, our Victoria Bureau Chief.
Good evening, Philip. How are you?